present except for Richard, Brandon, Simone, and Rem. Simone and Rem may be here, depends upon the traffic. They're still in control. Good. We have enough for approval of the minutes.
I move approval.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Chuck, you're first up on the list.
Great, thanks. Chuck Harmon, my first SWAC meeting was last month from Park County Public Health. I'm coming in to replace Gary, who's retiring very soon, and glad to be back. And what I wanted to talk a little bit about as far as some of our activities, first of all, we had already, and I think we reported this last time, put in for the CPG grant with the state. We are preparing to go to the board of commissioners to get their okay to move forward with getting the site hazard assessment grant move forward to the state. The other activities that I wanted to mention real quickly and issues that we're dealing with right now, we are working and just issued an updated letter to the owners of the now inactive Circle C landfill, and we met with them in late March to talk about what types of things need to be done or could be done to get towards terminating the post-closure permit. And so we're going to continue to work with them on finding some continued monitoring, and then work with Ecology and them to work on what kind of criteria can be used to evaluate the conditions there to allow termination of the post-closure permit. But I really can't say that second part, how long it takes to figure that out and then get them to that stage. But again, we had a productive discussion. The only other, the other thing I wanted to mention and note was that we are working on defining issues around, and I think it's on the agenda, the 50% cut in the CPG funding comes with what will that affect as far as our work in solid waste enforcement. And I'm still working on the details of what that really means if that, in fact, comes to bear. So that's the things that we've been, that are kind of at the top of our list.
And we send this out, Melissa Sutton, who works, Chuck, comes out, and you can see during the first quarter, they had 34 complaints, 29 were resolved, and 300 actions. And then, I don't know if you can speak to this, they actually had two enforcement actions, and it was two scrap metal recyclers, Royal Rangers Outpost,
yeah,
and then EH Metal Recycling, Inc.
I don't know as much about Royal, but I know that EH is a facility that has been operating. I think they're continuing to operate, and they had several issues with us as far as qualifying to be a non-permitted facility and just fulfilling all the requirements for that type of facility. I think they also had some issues with development and getting the right licensing to be that kind of facility. And we're working with those folks to figure out, to give them time to get in compliance. But as I understand it, they're not there yet. But they're going to be given a little more time to get all of their requirements up to date and legal, or we may have to issue them a stop operating.
I'm always impressed with Melissa's reports. Very thorough, and she does a good job at that. And the photos are always great. You know, the ones she takes, if there's something wrong, you can just see what's wrong with it. And so I would encourage you to continue to let her march like that.
Thank you. Yeah, no, she's great.
Yeah. Would there be a possibility, rather than getting this once a quarter, we used to get it monthly. And by now, I mean, whatever happened in January,
good idea.
we're so far past it. We used to get the report on a monthly basis.
Okay, I can look into that. I know that these quarterlies are for ecology.
Yeah, this is what she files with ecology, yeah. But we used to get a report that okay. This comes from, I'm sure.
Right.
This is
right.
A summary of what she does on a monthly basis.
Okay.
I think it's just a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll go back and talk about that. I'm still getting familiar with all how we do all the things that we do, but I can talk to her about, you know, does she keep a list like this that we can bring together and just update monthly to the SWAC? That's a good idea, right? So I see what you're saying, Don.
Another thing is, have we given ecology, the State Department of Ecology has the entire responsibility for that Ridgefield treatment, you know, wood treatment plant. We don't have an interest in that once they're involved with it. You guys don't check on it?
To my knowledge, we don't have any authority over the, you're talking about the remedial actions going on up there.
Yeah, they're testing new places. I got an article here. And they're testing, you know, people's houses now, not just where the plant was. They, okay. You know, this stuff leaches all over, you know. And,
right.
And I was wondering if we had any interest in that, or once ecology says it, they're going to do it, they're going to do it all.
Yeah, Alan, again, I haven't heard that we'll follow up deeply on sites that have gone over to ecology for cleanup oversight. I don't think typically we would. I can talk to Brian. I mean, that would fall under Brian DeDonker's responsibilities as the hazard substance assessor. But I can find out. Again, like I said, I'm still figuring all the things out, but I'll ask about that.
You ask him, let us know.
Yeah, I will.
A lot of information flows through this, too. On the annual reports, you can see one of them was AWE. I don't know if anyone's been out. They've been a long-running recycler here in the county near the landfill. It sounds like they are probably going to be...
At the end of June, I believe they're done. They states come down really hard on recycling facilities as far as it's actually the department's licensing. And there's a lot of new regulations involved in just operating at a small recycling facility anymore, and I think it's going to drive a lot of them out of business. I'm really concerned about the businesses in Eastern Washington because they're just small towns out there. And a lot of those businesses are going to go away because, one, it's a relatively expensive license, and then they've got, I mean, all these regulations about surveillance and taking pictures of the guys and their car. You got to have cameras. You got to have cameras inside the office, out in the yard. The list to me was pretty heinous. The one that really kind of blew me away, and I don't know how they're even going to enforce it, but after you've got like a mosquito fleet person that brings you in, I'll call it metal 12 times or more a year, 10 times, I can't remember what the exact number is, then they become into the category where they need a license and you have to issue them a 1099.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's what I said.
And the connection for all this, you want to explain that?
Well, it's driving. Basically the tweaker's stealing metal. And it's PUDs and especially pushed hard for this because up north they're stealing whole rural county power lines. And, you know, so there's one I think they stole up underneath the 500 bridge or something like that. They got in there and stole a bunch of cable out of there. And so, unfortunately this is going to have a real ripple effect on your small recyclers. Particularly metal recyclers, but when you've got somebody like a Metro Metals down the road, they can handle that. You know, they can pay they're set up to do that. But somebody who's been doing business like Paul has for years, you know, it just isn't going to happen. And then the other piece was when this is a changing marketplace for, you know, with the carts coming online,
people just find it easier to throw the recyclables in the carts than to take them down to their buyback center and, you know, get a few bucks for some cans. So,
well, and then the price is down too. I've got an article here on recycling is at a crisis, according to Waste Management. Waste Management said that lost $13 million in a quarter and shut down four recycling plants because there's just no money in the products anymore.
Yeah, we've got, you know, we'll come back to you probably next month to talk about, you know, what's happening out at West Van. We've still got a large stockpile out there, and we're going to take some steps to get that cleaned up and get through it. It's, like I said, it's just been probably the roughest patch I've seen since like 94, maybe 93. And there was a real crash back then.
But at least we get some movement.
Right. With the port shut down, what's happened is that, you know, it sat there, and then there was a glut. And then the material, you know, in the Northwest, it is anything that was stored outside, it's just rotting. So it's just been a perfect storm for them, and there's going to need to be some work done to get caught up and cleaned up. So that's kind of a side report on what's happening in the recycling and on the small end and on the large end.
Thanks.
Well, regarding the small operators there, are they talking to their state legislators to see if they can't take some steps to grandfather and or size of operation in order to get exemptions from those?
I urge Paul to do just that, and in fact to call Don for that matter. And that's, you know, you can only tell somebody what to do.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know who his actual house rep is out there, but you know, that's the first place I went because, you know, I started out in Eastern Washington. I know what razor thin margins those guys have always operated on, and with the crash in this market, it's just going to clean them out.
I went to the SWAP meeting in Umatilla County in April, and one of the haulers has actually petitioned DEQ to take his recyclables and landfill.
That's happening all across Oregon, and in fact, that's sort of what's going to happen to some of the recyclables, former recyclables out here, which are now just, garbage, you know, that's the only way to put it. It's unfortunate, but that's what's going on up and down the West Coast. And I do meet with the Metro directors and one of the Leslie Kopak from, I think that's how you say her last name, is DEQ is working on that kind of permit right now. So is that Hermiston Sanitary? Was it Hermiston Sanitary?
No, it was actually it was in a fellow county. It was City Garbage and LeGrand.
Oh, okay.
And DEQ just was going in circles. What do we do?
They're going to have to.
He's saying, I can't send it to market because of the transportation.
And they
do anything with it.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do, DEQ? And they hadn't resolved it at the time.
No, they still haven't, but they're working on sort of a one-time waiver.
Something's
going to
need to be done.
Yeah. And so it's like I said, at least in the 90s, you could get money for it, but you could move it.
Do you have anything else?
No, that's all I had for the group tonight. And please send me, you know, these are good questions, and I appreciate that, the request, and I'll go back and work on that. But in the meantime, you know, if you have any questions about any issues, you can get a hold of me and email whatever, and I'll try to take care of it. So, thanks.
Rich, you're up. I've got just a couple quick things. If you're not doing anything on Saturday morning, the Vancouver Downtown Association is having a cleanup. Meet at Turtle Place between 8 and noon. The following week, they're actually planting plants. They can kind of give us a little bit of it. We're offering a Recycling 101 class in late June, I think it's the 25th, which is an opportunity to see the transfer station. And a lot of our neighbors, both city and county neighborhoods go to this training as a way to kind of inform them, and then they pass on information through their newsletter, and then actually get win valuable prizes, cash, in their neighborhood association by learning about recycling. So if you haven't been to that, it's probably a good place to pick up and ask all those questions about the details of where does this go and what the heck's a clamshell. Let me know if you are interested. We're basically inviting neighborhoods.
Thank you. We don't have anybody from ecology, so Scott, do you have anything you would like to contribute? We decided to make you
look. Yeah, we,
I see that. I just noticed that. After 20-some years, yeah, really. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Well, you know, we have to acknowledge you somehow.
I appreciate that. Really, I can just echo everything Mike Davis said and the difficulties that go on. It's not just the West Coast with the slowdown at the ports. It's something that, you know, here in the Northwest, we really, really have great recycling programs. It's the norm. It's what our customers want. But as you move farther inland, you know, there's not that, or there's not the ability to have those recycling materials. And those that have done that, those are the ones I feel for right now, because transportation costs and the way the markets are so low now, it's incredibly tough on them. It's not just a Northwest phenomenon. It's all of us. I would just say that.
For information purposes, a lot of the stuff that recycling, if it costs more to recycle than it does to buy new, is that an economic factor that comes into play here in the market?
Well, not per my contract.
I'm just talking about in real life.
You know, that's always when you talk about you know, the greening environment and what can be done, you know, the energy involved in recycling something versus a
total cost
commodity. Yeah, there's that has been a struggle ongoing. You know, I'm not going to delve into that too much. I just like to say that consistently through the years in Clark County, Southwest Washington, we've had incredible clean recycling volumes that we've been able to move to markets when we have economic downturns, or in this case, other situations, and we've been able to move it. And our product is inherently cleaner and continues to be that way. Even in downturn markets, if your quality is there, you can sort of normally move the material. But when it's costing you X amount to process it and get it ready for market, the market's down here, that makes it incredibly challenging.
Then are the end customer willing to pay the increase in price too?
No, I mean, because again, recycling materials to end users is a global market anymore. So, you know, what happens in the Asian markets definitely affects us here.
Scott, before I left to become a snowbird, we had a new deal of pulling toasters and things out when they do the dump.
Yeah.
How's that work?
We still, as far as our customers coming in and disposing of trash, we absolutely still pull that material out. Anything that's recyclable or claimable, again, that's part of our contract. You know, we have to have about 10% there. And, you know, so we still have workers on the floor moving that material out. It's pretty interesting, even with like C&D drop boxes or drop boxes in general that are pretty heavy in construction materials, you know, we'll have workers go in there, and what comes in is the 40-yard drop box. You can pick up with one scoop of a loader, that's what's left of it, because we pulled out the wood, the metal.
The TV set.
Yeah, the cardboard and all that, yeah.
Good. Glad to hear that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your recycling thing for, you know, going through and educating, because I'm getting educated here on the way I used to recycle and the way I recycle here. Are you going to put that, is that going to go on TV, like a public TV, and, you know, show pictures of this stuff and everything, or?
You know, we haven't done that with the course, mm-hmm. but there is an excellent video along with, you'll be getting a postcard very soon. We'll give you a link to a video stars, Big Blue and Benny, and they take you through the plant, and you'll kind of see how all that goes. So everybody in the county will be getting a postcard that has that link.
But the video would be going on your computer, and I mean, how would you get the video?
Yeah, that would, yeah, so this will be on your computer, or...
Because I have people in my, within my place where I live. A lot of them don't have computers, which kind of, and so I'm just wondering a way to get that.
Let me tell you about Empower Up. They have recycled computers. Give them for a song. Good way to get into a computer. And again, I think you probably can, I don't know if you have like a web on your TV. Sometimes like you maybe have like a YouTube thing. You can probably go online and do that.
But it's going to be online.
It's on a website.
It's not going to go on public television.
No. Well, I mean, there's that possibility. It could be that CBTV would choose to run it like as a public service announcement. So that's just like a five minute video. We could probably look into that.
Well, also, the Waste Connections puts out really good literature. Okay. You know, you got a pile. You probably get a pile of these. Leave it at the office or the game room or wherever, all too. So. Because I have to have one over my wash machine because I'm bound and determined to put those clamshells in that container.
I threw away some today, which really hurt me.
And if you have a group, that, whether it's a community group or a tenant association or whatever, Waste Connections can send somebody out to do a presentation.
Well, we're going to have it.
And they're very good.
July, so that might be good.
Yeah.
You're up. Okay, thank you. We've got a couple things going on. One is Rich alluded to the postcards we're sending out here soon. 113,305 postcards. That's basically blanketing every household here in the county with information on how to recycle right in their blue carts. And as part of that campaign, we worked with some temporary employees, and over 4 weeks, we had five teams hit 25 routes with a quick inspection of the cart and then noting with a star if they did well or giving some actual educational feedback. And we were able to visit 20,000 households, which is about one-fifth of the county, so we're looking at this as a five-year project. It has been very successful. We started out by robocalling everyone within that route, just letting them know that we'd be out with county identifiable vests and cars, and not to worry. And we have had mostly very positive feedback. We had positive feedback in the field from the inspection taggers. And then in terms of phone calls that came in, we were able to actually give a lot of education. So it's been a big outreach effort. We're going to follow up. Waste Connections also, for those 20,000 homes, has most of their emails. So we'll be following up with an email, asking them if they saw the tag, if they did, if they changed their habits. And so this has been a multi-pronged effort. We've been working with the City of Vancouver very closely, Waste Connections, and all of our regional partners in the city. So we just concluding that on Friday, and since I've been here, it's the biggest outreach effort we've done, and it's been very successful. I don't know if anyone got a tag. All right, well, maybe next year. We are also working with a group of consultants in the Seattle area to conduct a processing capacity study for organics here in the county, and they'll be wrapped up with that report by the end of June, so we will bring that back to SWAC at a meeting in the future and run through all those findings and where we're going to move. We have issues with some of the commodities that go into the blue cart. We also have issues with the woody debris that needs to go process somewhere. There's new regulations, there's odor issues, there's encroachment of communities on these facilities, so they're being squeezed as well. So we've got some issues in different areas.
Is Metro interested in joining us in this?
Metro has just completed a similar type study with CH2M Hill. I don't think those results have been published yet.
They have now.
Oh,
Very recently. So we can include that in our presentation and certainly in the packet materials that we send out when we have that focus.
It literally came off the press like yesterday.
That's probably why I've heard about it. Is there talk about merging them?
We are certainly reviewing that, those aspects of that study.
Because, you know, when I went to the recycle plant at the Dalles, you know, they said that they could handle all of our stuff, you know, without us going into this.
Yep.
But if we had enough of our own, then, you know, maybe we would want to do that.
And they're relatively small right now, 20,000 tons, I believe.
Are we talking the food waste one or the recycling one?
This would be food waste and organics. Okay. All of the organics.
Okay, they literally, I'm talking, they just did an extensive waste sort of both their garbage and the recycling.
And that was done, I think, by someone different.
Yeah, that's, so we're talking apples and oranges here.
Okay.
But the organics one is not out yet, totally.
But the CH2M Hill study by Portland will be soon. Include that. So, ideally, we will be getting some good information back to all of you on how we deal with woody debris and chart our future.
So this is a thought process to commingle your debris and food waste?
No, this one is just on processing capacity. So to find out in the region, which includes the Dalles Port and Clark County and the metro area, over a 10, 15, 20 year projected history, where is the stuff going to go and how is it going to be managed? We have been busy with events, and we've had four events to date. We were in Yakko, Camas, and Ridgefield. For the first three events, I've got numbers. We had 1,000 participants, which is about right on schedule with where we were last year. We had a total of 3,000 for nine events, so we're about a third of that. Collected over a ton of food, donated 145,800 pounds of materials, came through, about 30,000 pounds of that was hazardous waste, and then an additional 20,000 pounds of latex paint, 31,000 pounds of e-waste, pretty impressive. And so when you're actually looking at what that, how those pounds equate, because I worked at the La Center event, they hauled off a 40-yard box full of tires. They have, I'm not sure how big the IMS tractor-trailer truck is. I think it's a 53-footer. They hauled away two of those full of block foam and electronic e-waste, old televisions, some giant, huge Hondas.
Where is that electronic waste going, you know?
They take it back to the port area. And they have a giant shredder, and if we're interested, we could go tour it. It's amazing. They just put it through this grinder, and it goes, and Rich has been there. It's similar to almost what they do in West Van with our sorting trommels and belts. And then through that process, they can separate out the plastic and all the metals. Very impressive. And worth checking out. We will be at Washougal on the 16th, and we're going to utilize the transfer station there for the first time because that is open every third Saturday for hazardous waste, so we're trying to direct folks to where they can always take it. And the mayor there, who is also train counting, has been working with door-to-door with households. They do not have mandatory garbage, so there are some folks who store up their garbage for an entire year of diapers and terrible things. And so they go door-to-door and haul this stuff away. So it's a free garbage day as well. So it's going to be an interesting one. And they send out coupons to every household in the city to bring in their trash. It's going to be a busy day at the transfer station. We've got a lot of boots on the ground for that one. And we did a medication event, Take Back, and there's still a lot of medication, drugs out there. We were at Clark College, Cascade Park, the center of Salmon Creek, collected 1,600 pounds from about 780 folks. We partnered with Kaiser, Prevent, Joy Alliance, some city sheriffs. We have some real great partners on that one. And keep that out of the garbage, keep it out of the sewer. So that's been a good positive. And other things as well. So we've been busy and productive.
You just catching your breath, or?
No.
We ready to move on?
I think we are.
The last meeting, I'd made a proposal to change our rules in regards to attendance, and I'd like to remove that motion. We had two excellent proposals, which you all have, as far as to how to address absences. It was specifically brought up because of Brandon Vick's involvement in the legislature. But that's what I was trying to address. We have a better explanation. So we have two proposals written by members that took the time to go out of their way. So is there any discussion on it?
What I wrote.
Okay.
Number one, my choice would be just leave it to my head. I don't think it comes up very often.
It doesn't.
And if somebody's on here and they aren't able for that much of the time, then maybe they've made a mistake or something's come up in their life. And they can't participate because we're not getting any feedback or anything from them. But if the board feels like we want to have something, I don't think it ought to be a protected class of elected officials in North Hampton. Anybody here? But I think other things come up in other people's lives too, and that's why I wrote that amendment, is there are other things other than the elected officials that things can come up and we ought to consider. So that's my comment.
Well, that brings up a good point for those that are retired. You want to get out of here in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're an elected official and live locally, it's no problem getting here. Just those that are out of the area. And again, you can make another special category there. Okay. I see your point.
That's true. It's pretty liberal right now, though. Attendance.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, we've got. Leave it alone?
Well, that's what I'd propose we leave it alone. But that's.
But that means then that we're not enforcing all of the present rule.
True. That's true. The nice idea, and I hadn't thought of this, is if we act on either one of these, we have a written policy. We have something that we can hand the staff and say, however you're going to make, this is a change that we want to make.
Sure.
So it's a written change that's there for everybody going forward. Now, whether it's a brief one that addresses elected officials, I have a tendency to be a little bit more liberal and say, let's look at everybody and say Alan wants to take another month when he snowbirds.
But wants to remain active on the commission.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't a high paid, high glorious job by any means. And when we get people that want to be on it, I think we need to support those people. You know, and if they've got a life other than here, well, so much the better.
Okay.
My only concern, and I put on my prior bureaucrat hat, is when you, the language, I wrote the one that's marked up in red, because I was trying to address the issue that you had raised. Steve wrote the other one. And my concern with the one that Steve wrote is what I would call discretion. It has discretion in it. People can make a case why they ought to be excused, and the commission can hear the case and either support it or not support it. And that gives us discretion. And my concern, when you give yourself discretion, is you open yourself up to some people saying, you did it for them, but you didn't do it for me. Why is their story better than my story? So I always like policies that are very straightforward, easy to administrate, and uniformly, and not opening yourself up to claims of, gee, I got treated differently. I don't have an issue with who gets included or not, you know, whether it's elected officials or a broader category of reasons. I'm indifferent about that. My just concern is about discretion.
So. Well, and the other consideration then is elected officials who are serving up in Olympia, for instance, they're up there because of the fact that they have to be there. They don't meet them here locally. I have a next-door neighbor, I don't think any of us are going to do this, though, but he's going to spend 6 months in Afghanistan or somewhere in that vicinity, and so someone in a category that is, or even by his business, is ordered out of the area for 6 months, but he wants to come back, then highly qualified experience and things like that, then maybe there should be some special consideration for an individual like that, who has to leave the area, not of his own volition, but has to for job security and or political reasons. So I can make a case either way for it, actually, and I think everybody feels that way. So these rules that we live by, are these that we make up, or do the counselors make them up and we have to abide by them? I don't know the answer to that.
As long as you're not raising your salaries.
or is there an opportunity to do that?
I call for the question. The way that I read this is we can create rules for ourselves in terms of how we govern ourselves,
okay,
and adopt them. It's within our discretion, and it's like that's described in, yeah, in, okay, in the policies that we have.
And that's what I didn't really think about when I made the verbal motion. I like having this written.
I like it written too.
Because then it's there, it's resolved. We never had, did we have anything at all, Lisa?
Well, I will just say, thank you. There was a period of time, and I don't know if it was when I was early in my business, but I had missed 2 meetings, and I believe it was, I can't remember if it was Leslie, I think it was Leslie maybe, or Susan, who phoned me up and said, it was like 5:30, 5:15 at night, and said, you know, Lisa, you're coming up on your 3rd meeting, and if you don't make it tonight, you have to go through the process of reapplication for your position. Could you possibly show up? She did do that to me. In fact, it happened twice. And so I don't know where that rule was, or if it was just her thing or her way of keeping me on my toes, but I did receive that telephone call twice.
But Richard's not here. I'd ask him, but to my knowledge, rules have never, ever really come up with this group.
No, and I don't know where that was, and you know, and too bad Anita's not here, because Anita probably knows exactly, but that was my understanding, is that after you missed 2 meetings, that the 3rd one meant that, you know, you had to go through a reapplication, and I don't know that the counselors would want to do that, but it certainly kept me on my toes and cognizant that, you know, maybe I shouldn't do this if I, you know, was so. But I was at a busy time with my business.
Cynthia brought up Brandon's absence to me, and it just started this whole procedure. So that's why we're.
And if he's not calling and saying, you know, hey, I want you to know, or sending something, I think it does raise questions.
Well, I just think if you put just elected officials, we're almost looking like a political body. That's what hit me when we first started talking about it, when you brought it up. And I didn't want to feel like we're a political party. And We have some discretion, I think, right? I mean, is that...
We've got a lot of discretion.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that if we have discretion, can it be abused? Mm-hmm. But I don't know what it is that we would be abusing. I mean, I can understand or appreciate the concern, but what... It's not a... It's critical, but I don't see anything that would be a real not dire.
I understand. I'm just speaking from my experience. And I think the point was making, I think it's a good point. There's rules, and then there's the enforcement of the rules, which are two different things.
Well, there's discretion. We've all managed something or somebody at a time in our life, and you have to have that discretion.
One thing that this does, the rules, is that it does elevate or escalate, so that you know when you hit that three or coming up with three, you've got to have something in writing, which has been brought to SWAC. So there are some, as Lisa mentioned, I mean, at least put you on notice, which is stronger than what we do have currently. So something would be helpful to have in writing so we can address.
I agree. I like stuff in writing because we don't have to rely on our memories. Yeah. A piece of paper, it's not just for us, it's for the people that follow us.
Yeah.
So it ought to be something that we feel comfortable as guides as well, often in the future.
Now that part is why I withdrew my verbal. So, is there a motion on either selection?
I'd like to just make one more observation if I may here. Brandon Vick is East Clark County business. And during the process of applying for this position, was that considered, or was this before he was elected the
this
first
before
time?
Before he was elected.
Okay, so he's elected the first time. So then we're basically talking about making a special category in here for elected officials. And I think that's going to be the exception rather than the rule. So, you know, I'm not really for including this in our rules because of the fact that I don't think this is probably going to happen a very few times. But at the same time, they should ask to be excused. That is, I think, is very important. Because if you look at the number of times they have to miss, really is only about three times during the, you know, unless they run overtime like they're doing now. And there are some people from Olympia who are in the local area tonight, so I got a question about that, too. Because it's the budget people who are in Olympia now. Not everybody in the House and Senate. I'm not going to support either one of the two. But I think this is going to be an exception, and it's going to pass by September.
Alan, what's your thought?
Well, my problem is that we meet the first Thursday of the month. Usually we take December off because it's a holiday month. And then I leave it after day after Christmas, so I miss January, February, and March, and then yeah, I just can't get back here by the first Thursday in April usually. So that's what I've been doing. But I wrote that down in my application when I asked for the job, and it was accepted. So I think at least I'm grandfathered into it. But you know what the heck?
You're going to come out well. One of the things Pete and I were talking about is we want to have a July meeting. Because 4th of July is on Saturday, and the first Thursday is the second. We traditionally have taken holidays off, so those with families who want to get out of town can. Yeah. So, okay.
I'm indifferent. I was just trying to give you some words to work with.
Oh, I
am. I'm indifferent.
By the way, I took all my stuff with me, and I went to the landfill at Pisa, walked all through the landfill and found out how they did it. The Indians own it, and they're making more money than you can believe.
Instead of the casino up up north, we ought to have.
That's right.
So back to Don's question. Is there a motion for either of these proposals? Because in lack of a motion, it dies.
Lack of a motion, it's dead. It stays where it is.
Okay, so then that means we will take action, I guess, on our end.
Well, there's a little bit of discretion. I would ask for that.
If we're going to do discretion, then I'd say we got to do the
and make a motion. And make a motion.
That is good.
All right.
If we're going to do discretion, we have to know it, then I'll make the discretion for the one I removed in section 5.
There's a motion on the floor.
Can we call one Amendment 1 and one Amendment 2, just for the record?
In order to differentiate.
Stephen's
the one that Stephen wrote.
Well, that's helpful.
The one in red, call it 1.
Okay.
The one that's not in red, call it 2.
There's a motion to accept Amendment 1.
Well, actually, Amendment 2 is what he's proposing.
No, you got 1. He put this as 1, and that one is 2.
Okay.
Excuse me. So I propose number 2.
Mr. Chair, can I have about 30 seconds off to reread this?
Sure. The only thing I would say with respect to this is the motion that's being proposed will give you this flexibility and discretion for anybody for whatever reason they want to bring forward.
Right.
And it will memorialize that. So it, to the extent you feel comfortable with that level of discretion, it will accomplish that end. And in doing so, it will allow you to have people participate, given whatever life circumstances they have to cope with. So that's what I would argue in favor of this motion. That's what it will provide you.
That makes sense.
Further discussion? Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Moved and seconded to adopt amendment number 2 as presented. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Cynthia, would you make that part of the records?
Yeah.
And argument. And change it in our rule book.
And to notify Brandon.
I will.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to go off the subject for just a moment. I'm not going to be here in June. And Pete and I had the discussion about the July meeting. Is there objection to suspending the July meeting? To suspend the July meeting. Okay. Mike?
Actually, I'm going to introduce Seth. So this is Seth Otto with the...
Seth, why don't you come up here?
Sure, thanks. Do you want to hit the lights? Or are we going to do
Yeah, let's hit the lights. I'm going to let you drive. I've got everything loaded.
Okay.
Indeed. Here's that.
Just like a ray of sunshine there.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, thank you. So my name is Seth Otto. I'm with Moll Foster Longy Consulting Company here based in Vancouver. We're working with Mike on master planning for the redevelopment of the Leichner Landfill property. Do you want to say anything, Mike? Or?
No, go ahead. Okay. I'm going to leave this on while we go through the boards a little bit,
okay.
And then we'll be moving on where we've taken the process.
Yeah. So I'm going to start with a brief overview. I believe Mike and or Pete gave you a little bit more of an in-depth update at your last meeting, so I'll keep that pretty brief. There's three things I want to cover tonight. State of the conceptual redevelopment plan, the outcome of the open house that was held on the 23rd, and then discussions that we've had around property disposition. So then this is where we are now. We started the existing conditions analysis, worked through narrowing down our focus on redevelopment scenarios and preferred options, and we held our open house on the 23rd.
May I interrupt here
just
a second? What outcome, as far as this commission is concerned, is expected?
Very good.
I would call it an advisory recommendation.
Okay, so in other words, we'll make a recommendation to the council member.
Is that it? Correct. And actually, Brian and I had this discussion at the disposition meeting that this is kind of an odd doc, but. You know, we still feel like not only are we reaching out to the public through these open houses, but you also represent the public, too. So as we go through this, and you know, like I said, I'm calling it an advisory recommendation because basically that's what, you know, we're doing, too. Is we're advising them and providing them a recommendation and from the directors, so including Brian Carlson.
Okay. And the reason I ask that is because the human frailty is that I'll probably pay more attention if I know I got to vote on it at the end, rather than being an advisory thing that I can just, you know, process in the normal amount
right.
of stuff that goes over my desk. And
so, kind of, you know, the two, I think, talking points that we're going to get to is, you know, that you concur with, you know, our selection of the preferred alternative. And then we'll be back to talk about Fleischer some more. And, you know, we're doing something very similar with Fleischer. Then we're going to sit down with the Caldy and start to negotiate. The reduction in MACA funds may hurt us a little bit, but we're still moving forward with that. So right now we're at the open house phase, and then we're going to move forward with the property disposition alternatives. And kind of where you're at is, kind of concur with this on, you know, preferred alternative.
Thank you.
Thanks. So I'll share with you what was presented at the open house. This is our preferred conceptual redevelopment alternative. So primary points here, access is at Northeast 88. This lines up with the existing street, creates an intersection there. This is what we heard from Public Works, the S location, their preferred location, rather than creating one up here at 90th or a staggered one just north of that. So you have a long leg in and then a north extension. Benefit of this is it provides easy access to Fleischer should the county acquire it or if an additional developer comes in. You're not reconfiguring the layout of parcels here. This is conceptual. We don't actually have buildings. We don't have an architect on board. We really just wanted to space out what could fit on the site, given parking, landscape, stormwater infrastructure requirements. And we came up with almost 300,000 square feet. And this is a fairly conservative assumption about parking requirements, which of course are based on actual occupant, not on broad use. Yeah. A couple other features to note, 30-foot landscape buffer on the south here, rather than have an access road and an easement that runs all the way along, we thought it would make more sense to just have access points to the monitoring wells. Provides much more buffering for the neighbors, and then you don't have an odd, long, narrow road. It's really not very useful. We had heard originally of a lot of interest in providing access to the property and through to a potential future park on the landfill. This is very much in the public narrative right now. This is going to be a park you want access. So the conceptual plan includes this pedestrian walkway through the site and then up to a potential future park with paths and other things around the landfill, or the former landfill. One thing to note that we've since come to realize is, one, accessing the methane facility from the south end of the landfill is not feasible. This is way too steep for an access road. Also, there's a need to access, I think, a utility easement through the north end of the property here. And so this is an existing roadway. We can maintain that, shift everything to the south. So any future development could potentially look quite a bit different, but it would not have development up on this portion of the property.
About the 20-foot strip or something like that.
Yeah.
We need that to maintain access. That's the landfill access road today. And also what had happened, and I've been working with the 94th Avenue widening team to get utilities stubbed off of here as part of this process. And Clark Regional Wastewater District, we'd asked them to either place a manhole even with that road, the access road, or bring that a larger pipe all the way down to 88th and stub it in where we're going to, basically the only thing that's going to be at 88th at this point is a commercial access with utilities and signalization in it. So we'd hope that they would do that, they would not, and so basically we're going to maintain that road as an easement. Clark Regional Wastewater District. They have a lift station off of 90th, and you know, it is what it is.
And there's sidewalks on both sides of 94th and Wilderness, is that right?
Not now.
Not now. No.
There will be.
Yeah, that's what I meant. That's,
yeah.
On this drawing, I was sorry. Yeah. I was just looking at. Yeah.
Yep.
Where do I park if I'm going to the park?
If you're going to the park, up on 90th, there'll be an access.
99th.
Or 99th, sorry. Yeah.
A car park up there for the park.
Yeah, so I'm also on that team, and we're starting engineering on that. You were sunbathing during our tour, but I get you another one. And basically, the idea is that they'll come in and off that road, they'll go up on a bench and have a parking lot up there.
Now, one of the things we were always concerned about was getting natural gas to the area.
Yeah, and what's happening there is I worked with Waste Connections and Northwest Natural. We went through a number of calculations on, you know, how much demand will be created by X number of trucks in their fleet, you know, turnover, and we determined that it could probably last the 5 years with the current fueling stations and the low pressure 4-inch line that they've got now until 99th is built. And when 99th is built, they're coming across with the high pressure. They're going to come down the east side of 94th where there's a trail, and so they won't have to go into the road.
Well, they usually just make the road and then they make the trail.
There's a 5-year moratorium on that.
Oh.
So we have been working with them, but they have a policy of basically of speculative investments. The UTC, they're regulated by the Utilities and Transportation Commission. They won't let them do it. And so basically they've got to be able to say, yeah, it's going to be paid off in X number of years. And even though they know there's going to be something built there, until it's built, you know, that's another trigger. And so they don't know how much draw is going to be by whatever's going to go there.
How big was the line that was put in there? The line put in within the last 18 months.
I think it's just 2-inch coming off the road to the fueling station.
6 or 8-inch.
It's four in the road.
Four in the road?
Yeah. I think it's just 2-inch line.
Station. 2-inch?
2-inch.
That is correct, yeah.
So I'm going to have to go back again.
Yeah, you're going to have to go back and do it all over again.
So perspective rendering, again, very conceptual, showing what light industrial, typical light industrial would look like. This was important for the neighborhood, especially the neighbors to the south, and to learn to be sure that nothing, you know, too monstrous would go in, no smokestacks, no, you know, heavy machinery. So again, it's sort of the more of a business park look, really, and with a lot of buffering. One thing that will change is we'll put primarily evergreen trees along the southern edge of the property to provide, you know, so you've got a buffer here and then a year-round buffer here. Some of the things we have.
And so just so that we're clear about one other thing, when you go to 94 next year, you may not see these trees right here. I mean, right. The development might put them in later, but they're putting in rain gardens in that area.
Well, are you going to put in the south trees before that even starts? You talked about it.
I am working on a proposal from our vegetation specialist. I'm going to get that probably this summer and have it ready to go to the Leichner Landfill Oversight Committee for discussion with this next budget. We do need to figure out there's a hydrant going to go in right here, I believe, somewhere. So we're going to need to figure out how we're going to get water in here for about the first 4 or 5 years. But what we're talking about is this would be basically bark, fir, and understory. So relatively easy to maintain between the fence line and out to here. And then we would be able to, in the interim before anything's built out there, it would be easier to maintain. And so the same thing would go around on this bench up here. That way I think that we'll give the neighbors a little more confidence that we are actually concerned that they do exist. Just some notes, when we get to this next round of where we talk about the open house, you are going to see that a lot of the comments really that we've gotten on this so far have really been about 94th. They were really concerned about traffic in and around the church, and concerns on traffic that, you know, someday this might bring. So that's kind of, you know, that, and then this group of houses right here, this cul-de-sac, has been fairly vocal, but one of their kind of their main guys has kind of gotten on board with this, as long as they, you know, as part of the condition of the sale, these are, you know, first. So they get the year-round screen not only in front of them, but across the street also.
Are we taking, I mean, what I heard at the open house, some of the lady that said, well, number one, I didn't know anything was going to get built there. Nobody ever told me. The other thing was, you're taking some of their frontage or whatever, and she was concerned about some sprinklers or whatever. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. So her property's down here. She's going to lose frontage
for the road.
Yeah. She's just wondering when the county's going to come in and take. She just doesn't want them to come in, dig up her sprinklers, and one day not have sprinklers. That was her.
So it's just really a matter of communication, that was all.
Yeah, and that's related to this road.
It's sort of like there was one comment, and I don't know where this came from because I was there and could have told them about it, about 99th also. Somebody should have been here and talked about 99th. I was there. I don't know why he didn't come up and talk to me. But
I live on 29th Avenue, and they're going to put in 88 corners. And you can't imagine how far the county can come into your front yard. You know, before, you know, they came out there with 17 different, machines and tripods and did all their thing and stake. I got stakes in my front yard about halfway through the grass. That's county property. Clear up to there, you know. So, you know, she is going to lose her sprinkler system.
Well, they were compensated.
Oh.
If they were out of the right of way and we had to go in there, that was acquired as part of the right of way for this. And,
Yeah, her concern was not that it was going, is that she didn't know when, and she didn't want to go out, turn it on, and have water squirt.
Yeah, no.
I mean, it was a little irrational.
So just FYI, I was at another meeting today where we're talking about staging and some of the other stuff that's going to have to occur out there. It's rated real close to go out to bid. The process, you know, it's a real long building process to get a road built. But once you're there, it goes out. It's only out for a couple weeks. It comes back. They're on board. So July 2nd is when they're shooting to kind of get rolling out there.
Are there power lines that have to get moved on people's property too? Or?
I think most of it's underground there already.
What's a vegetated stormwater facility?
We see a lot of different words for it, but it's essentially, rather than a dry well that captures runoff, it's a vegetated, so it's planted with appropriate plantings that will, I mean, it captures and cleans stormwater runoff, essentially, and it's part of the new requirements that ecology's put out.
So it's supposed to regular stormwater?
As opposed to, right.
Before it goes to the stormwater drain?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and when I said there's rain gardens in here, the percolation through the soil there is so good because of the gravelly trout bill layer. They're going to actually, you know, infiltrate it under the road. So, I mean, those green spaces along there are actually the stormwater facilities alongside the road.
Yeah, and that's what these are too. There's no more, there will be no pipes to a central facility. It will all drain to here and it will all percolate now.
Isn't a swale another name for that?
Yeah, swale.
I'm looking for that word.
Bioswale,
There are technical differences in each of those, but we'll get you there.
Yeah.
And so essentially, you know, what we're doing today is we're kind of showing you what that general layout of the road looks like, what it can look like, some of the conditions that we're going to put in place as part of the, you know, disposition piece. And then we're going to come back later and show you how Fleischer fits in with that. And, you know, how the two together may or may not work. You know, it may or may not be worth cleaning up. We're going to find out more about that in our next phase. So,
yeah,
you know, for the most part, the folks that were there weren't virile. So I've gotten one other letter from that group I pointed out that, you know, some of these folks were told that it was going to be a park or a golf course. It's a common theme that I've heard through the years, and I probably get 1 to 3 calls a year. You know, my realtor said this. Is that true? No. If you live by the, and then I have to go to Maps Online, figure out if they're north of that, you know, where the flare station is, and if they're north of that flare station, then yeah, they're going to have a park in their backyard maybe 10 years from now. But if they're down from where the green vegetated buffer starts, no, they were, you know, I would be quite honest with them that I can't tell you what's going to be there, but it's light industrial property and there's going to be something there someday.
Was there something in the paper about the flare station not working?
In the paper?
Yeah. I read that.
Yeah, there was.
Yeah.
Light flare?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the compressor was down. I can't remember the whole thing, but it was a corrosion issue.
How'd that get in the paper?
I don't know, but
somebody spilled the beans.
Well, yeah,
in your organization.
It was, February was down for, it was only down for like about a week and a half. And we
but all that methane you put in the air.
Oh, but that one was down. The flare wasn't down.
What was down?
The air compressor. The flare goes down. The flare honestly goes down all the time. Okay, and the reason is especially during the winter, the pipes are so old, they tend to expand and contract a lot, and the boots will come off, and then we have to go find the leak. It's set up to scramble when X amount of O2 gets into the system. And then it'll shut itself off and scramble. Then they go leak detect. Then they turn it back on. And in a lot of landfills at this age, they actually, they're on a timer. They get to a certain life and they run them, you know, 6-8 hours a day, just like when the people are there, then they shut them off, the methane builds up overnight, they draw it down and off they go. I mean, we, you know, when they start out, they do this, and then they go in this long, long, slow decay, and we are in the long, long, slow decay out here, so it could be down for days and it wouldn't create a hazard.
Yeah, but it sounds.
It does. But really, what was down was the main compressor for the condensate system. That blows me away. I never saw it.
I like your artwork.
Oh, well, thank you.
Is that done in-house?
Yeah, we have a designer that does that work. Yeah.
Nice job.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
I didn't know either.
You see some of these renderings, and I've seen a book of a designer like this, and you have to write on the real photos, that you know, it's not computer generated. So I think we've covered most of the open house. There were 38 community members that attended. Stephen, you were there. Is Stephen? We heard the biggest concerns being impacts to 94th. There's a lot of queuing issues at the intersection with Pat and access problems on 88th. Things that are kind of generally out of the scope of this project. There is some concern that this might exacerbate those issues, but the county designed the 94th improvements with potential development on this property in mind, so it should all be designed in there. This may get signalized, and we told folks that, so I think that's fairly likely down the road. So let's move on into this.
I have a question about this particular project. Are you coordinating this with CRADC?
They're aware of it.
And yeah. The reason I say that is that one of the divisions they have there is land for jobs. And so when you're talking about development, stuff like this, they're very interested in that time schedule.
Yeah. So Mike Beaumont was on our, he's the executive director, he was
right.
On our developers panel that came
okay,
out.
Okay,
is
good.
It the site? Yeah. They're tracked.
Thank you.
As we move this into being ready for the market, we'll make sure that it's on their, you know, it's in their portfolio.
How will we communicate with the people then when it's going? Is that like a door-to-door thing? Or
when it actually goes, you mean?
Yeah, and you know what you're going to do so they when they see the Army coming in doing something, they'll be aware of it. That's kind of what I gathered out of that.
Well, I think for this one, when we get ready to wrap everything up, we'll send out, you know, we'll update the website, we'll send out one more mailer, say this is your last opportunity to comment before it goes to the board. And, you know, and at that point, I really just don't expect
you. July, right?
Huh?
You're going to start on the road in July? Did you
say? Oh, the road, yeah. Okay.
So how do we communicate?
No, this road, 94.
Yeah.
But is that going to impact the people? That, I mean, you're going to have to tell them what's going on.
That's the public works.
Oh, okay.
So I don't, yeah. I'm not sure how they do that. I think they will let them know.
Okay.
They got a mailing list already for their open house folks.
Yeah, they were all over me like, you know, honey.
Oh, yeah.
They got, you know, 5-6 letters, you know, and of course we were in Arizona. And, you know, finally got this call that they're going to come take my corner away. I wonder about that. So I removed my first section of fence. And then yesterday they came and they cut some more concrete clear over here. So now I have to take another section of fence. Now, it doesn't mean they're going to take out everything, but they might have to, you know, you got to sit on something while you work here, so they might have to do something else.
Well, is that all right away that they already own?
Yeah.
Maybe.
So, the next and kind of last phase of this part of the project is now that we have a design alternative that works well, that we're happy with, that meets the objectives of the county in terms of maximizing buildable area on the land, providing opportunities for employment, job development on the site, provides a decent return on investment. We're looking at how the county will go forward in putting this onto the market and getting it actually developed, so the disposition strategy. And our partners at Echo Northwest, an economics consulting firm, put together this presentation, which I'll run through fairly quickly. If anything's not clear, just stop me, speak up, ask questions of Mike. I'm sure you'll chime in here. So these are the range of five different options, generally organized from an option that provides the least amount of ongoing control for the county to the most amount of control. Also, corollary to that is least amount of ongoing county obligation and involvement to most ongoing county engagement and involvement. So we'll just run through these. First is just a landscape, and you can advance as ready to go here. Yeah, and you guys have this in front of you as well. So land sale, just like what it sounds like, title transfer, county puts it for sale, sign up, and sells it. It would be a clean end to county ownership on the property, with the exception of any ongoing obligations, the consent decree, monitor, environmental conditions. The benefits would be simplest, least costly approach. Sale of the land could immediately recapitalize the FART fund. Again, it removes the county from most responsibility, and then the development produces property taxes and fees for the county, so direct return. The drawback is, of course, the county would essentially lose most control over what could happen on their property if it's just an outright sale. So developer could come in and say, yeah, I really like this, I'm going to build this, buy the property, and then decide, no, we're actually going to put in a transfer station.
Yard debris.
Yeah. Next option, put out a request for proposals for a master developer, and then enter into agreement to sell the land either in whole or in part, all at once or over phases, to that developer. It would include fairly rigorous development agreements to follow standards of design, layout, landscaping, etc. on the property. So advantages here, again, removes the county from any of the obligations associated with the land. Upfront sales benefit to the county, and then the county could structure the deals to the sale of the parcels over time to realize benefit. So sell some in 2015 at a certain rate, sell some in 2020 at a different rate, and as the property redevelops, of course the value of these parcels increases, so there's a built-in benefit there. Drawback is this is an expensive and time-consuming process to go through the bids, and then you'd need to have a fairly rigorous development agreement in place. Next option, very similar actually to that one, except instead of selling the property, county would enter into a long-term lease arrangement with the developer. Again, this just provides the county with that much more control through a lease agreement. Let's flip to the next slide. Again, county maintains land ownership, which is, you know, control over the property and how it's developed. Ongoing revenue through rent. Again, can structure the leases to benefit from the value of development that's generated on the property. Land costs are lower up at the front end for developers. That assumes county's involved in some aspect in developing the public infrastructure on the site. Drawbacks, essentially that it's a longer payback into the FARF. That's one of the biggest drawbacks. It's going to be, and one of the things that we heard particularly from the developers that we met with is it's going to be difficult to attract a developer with this. They're not interested in ground leases, even if there's some favorable terms. It's just really not something that they like to get in. They want to own the land, especially light industrial, due to the nature of that market. Developers like to have control of the land. Then the next one, county acts as master developer. So county invests in the infrastructure, builds the roads, adds in the water, develops the parcels, works with the occupant or a developer or most likely a business that wants to locate here to build out the property according to their specifications.
More like what the port does?
It's a lot like what the port does. That's right. Very much akin to the port.
Is the county engaged in operations like this now?
No.
Okay.
And one of the drawbacks that we had really talked about was, you know, where would we even get the money? I mean, it almost, solid waste couldn't do it. Public Works couldn't do it.
Oh, I see all kinds of drawbacks. That's the reason why I asked.
Yeah, and so you're really talking, you know, general fund, and everybody's general fund is tapped.
And you got money at risk.
Yeah. I mean, this is exactly, this works in a situation where you have something like the Port Authority that's set up to do this.
Right.
And they can hold that cost and they can take on the liability.
And they have taxing authority to do just this.
Yeah, exactly. So this one, was dismissed fairly quickly. The other option that holds some interest is setting up a community renewal area or public development authority around the properties associated with the landfill. And this is something that it's a little bit new, but essentially it's similar to what an urban renewal area might be, where the county sets up this special district that allows certain authority for certain fast tracking for permits, access to funding to the state, and allows the county to actually, if you flip to the next slide, you've got some benefits. So one of the benefits of the community renewal area is that it's sort of a workaround the constitutional issue in the state of Washington that restricts the public extension of public funds for private benefit. So county cannot buy private land, clean it up, redevelop it, and then sell it to a private party.
I think the city of Vancouver is doing that through LIDS.
Local Improvement District?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did that with the crossings on the railroad coming in from the east side. And the homeowners down along Evergreen Boulevard there accepted that as a long term, and then we guaranteed the money for that. But they actually paying for it. They can either buy out on their contract up front or pay for it on a monthly basis until their portion is done.
There are ways around this.
Yeah.
There are definitely ways to work around this. But the outright acquisition of property to benefit a private party is illegal.
So where we got to with this particular one is that it would work well for Fleischer. And so you're probably going to, we're going to do a little more investigation on that one for Fleischer, but we're going to go back to the one and two and kind of talk a little bit more about a hybrid approach that the directors are recommending.
Yeah.
Let's go back to B.
So A and A, a hybrid between A and B.
A and B, excuse me.
Yeah. So it was agreed that selling the property is, rather than leasing, makes the most sense. The county's not interested in being the master developer, and there was, I think, even less, or there's very little interest in the county being the master developer, and similarly, there was not interest in soliciting a master developer to work for the county or to acquire the property. So the county, in the hybrid sense, working toward a sale, but developing a binding site plan and other deed restrictions that would bind a new purchaser to certain conditions on the property. So maintaining the buffer, maintaining the roadway alignment.
You can also tell them what they can put on there.
Restricting uses, restricting, you know, design guidelines, things like that. Yeah.
So like CC&R.
Yeah, a little bit more advanced than that, you know, so they would actually have, it probably would be related to a site plan. So it could be bound to something like this.
Now, a place like this that's been environmentally studied to death, are things like the environmental impact statements, can that be waived?
So that's not, an EIS is not required in this case. There is the State Environmental Policy Act, the SEPA checklist, and you can go, as part of this hybrid approach, you would develop what's called a planned action SEPA, so it would be bound to this, you know, concept plan like this.
That sometimes what holds up sales and everything else.
Right. And Mike's actually gone ahead and done you know, 3/4 of the work toward that.
Yeah, so I've been working on, like, the archaeological predetermination. I've got geotech work done, wetland delineation, predetermination, the phase one environmental is complete. So I'm really kind of down to flood hazard, which is just a letter from our guys, and tidal, and then the stormwater work. We're still kind of talking about if we're going to do that as part of 99 or what we're going to do. So I'm really down to tidal and stormwater. I mean, I've walked upstairs and get our development group to write me a letter for the flooding, and we're done. And really, this section of the property down here is relatively clean. There was a back in the up to the 40s, we don't know how long it lasted. There was a couple of little burn areas in here, and when they closed this landfill, they took out 68,000 cubic yards of this sort of burnt down material, put it all in here. And so the geotech work kind of went in and notes that, and notes there could be some rubble in here too. I'm going to have to do test pitting to determine what type of fill went in there for kind of the next phase of geotech work. But it gets you far enough that a developer knows what he needs to do based on the soil types and the well borings that we have there. So that geotech work, you know, is a pretty big deal in getting that out of the way. And the phase one environmental, so they know this is clean in general. So we're quite a ways away to me from, you know, developing the site, but we're moving right along.
Yeah, a lot of pieces are in place so that when it's ready to go on market, it actually will be turnkey. In the sense that the developer won't have to figure out access, they won't have to go through the environmental process, they won't have these questions. It'll be a package handed to them, essentially. So our next steps are to evaluate one minor step that's associated with the disposition analysis is to look at comparable properties, comparable developments in the region, look at value per square footage. That also will help the county with the decision about potential acquisition of the Fleischer property, and if adding that 9.12 acres provides sufficient enough benefit to an overall development to justify the cost of acquiring that property. We had an appraisal come in at about $1.6 million for these 9 acres as clean. And then we had, through our remedial investigation, estimated a range of cleanup costs between, I think, $1.8 and $3 million. So there's need for negotiation there.
So right now, there's need for negotiation on the property. That's one of the things we've got to talk to our legal counsel about, and talk about this CRA, what we can do with that, how we could find this all into a package if we had a buyer that was interested in it after it was cleaned up. And then with ecology, the standard grants or remedial action grants are at 50%. So if it was $3 million to clean it up, we'd be really tight if something went wrong. We could end up upside down on it. Yeah. And you know, it's some decision making. And that's another one that, you know, we could use some assistance with and some advice and recommendations in moving forward. So what we've got is sort of this dual pathway of you acting as a citizen advisories, and then the directors making a recommendation, and they'll both end up somewhere to the board at some time. And I'm still, with the changes in the form of government, I still need to work with the county manager to figure out exactly how all that will work now.
Put the lights.
So I think that's it for Seth and I. I don't know that we've got any more.
Question.
Okay.
I keep asking, is the wetlands we created, we're sure that that's not going to bother 99 going through? We've got 100% occurrence.
I'm sure, yeah. I'm going to be.
You're sure, but I mean, do we have, I think nobody's going to come in and say you
can't. They'll probably come, go back out there again and do another wetland determination. I mean, to be sure. But
the state has to approve that, right?
Yeah. We did, mine came back negative, and so it was the one in the south. And so that was a wetlands predetermination that the county did. Mm-hmm. So I think our department does and approves them at our level. So, you know, that's what I know about that. But I'd have to, if you're using federal and state funds, it might be different. So I'm not using any federal and state funds. So I'm more or less looking like it's a private development. So roads is a different animal, and I'd have to ask the project manager on that particular question.
Do we have any commercial real estate companies that are buying this or watching this at all? Or
not that I'm aware of, but you know.
There's got to be a lot of rumors floating around out there about availability of land, et cetera, and development, et cetera. So.
Pete Capel at one point was approached by somebody, and you know we were still in negotiations to acquire the property from the Leitners at the time. And it was bound up by, you know, those agreements. We unwound so we could just get to this point. And, you know, once we get, I think, you know, nobody's going to be interested in it until that road's done. Because it's going to be not a nice time between now and next year getting up and down that road. And so once that gets done, I think there's going to be, you know, potentially some interest, and that's kind of why I'm just rolling along here, because I know that that's sort of one trigger point, and when 99 goes in, for sure there will be a lot of interest in that property. I mean, to me it's that there's the window between 94th being done and, hey, maybe somebody gets, you know, interested in it. But once you bring 99th across, you have that circular traffic, you're a mile from 205, you've got a really good trucking location then, and transportation-oriented businesses. So, and even like you said, there can be, you know, medical facilities and all sorts of what I didn't always consider light industrial uses. Let me just put it that way.
Great. Okay.
So you are looking for an advisory recommendation now?
No, let's wait until we get to the point where we can explain the disposition alternative that we're going to get to. And then I think what we're going to describe then is sort of the conditions that we're going to put on that. And you've seen the alternative, you've seen that at that point you'll see the conditions that we're going to attach to the site plan. And then I think we're going to be dovetailing together with the directors at that point. And probably before then, you'll see more on Fleischer. And we'll be same thing in a month or so. We're done with the IPG at the end of this month. And so the perspective and the master plan rendering that you saw, we'll have one of those for Fleischer also. So you can kind of see what that would look like combined with this development. And so we can kind of start kind of going down a parallel path there also.
Now, is the Koski property in this?
That's it.
That's it.
That's the Koski. We're calling it the Leitner campus. We're souping it up now.
That's it?
It's all fancy.
It's like our garbage man is now a sanitary engineer, right?
Yeah.
Got it.
You
can. The Carval.
Thank you. Thank you.
And a million bucks and then tracking.
CPG funding update.
Rich, I've got some paper I'll pass out, but you're looking at the front side of it. So look at that. It's like you can pass that down. And you've got some notes here. So this graph is a couple years old. If you look down the if you look down the lower right corner, it shows the projection for 2013 through 2015. So I don't have exactly what those numbers are, but this shows kind of what the growth in the MOTCA or Model
Toxics
Control Act revenue is. So 85% or more of this has come from the sale of fuels in Washington State, and you can kind of see that it grew over the last decade and a half significantly from what it had been pretty stable. Then 2013 and on, it kind of just grew. So in the governor's budget that went to the legislature, they had done a forecast, I think back in October, and it looked pretty good. And they were going to assume maybe a little bit of inflation, but have the same amount. So the coordinated prevention grant application that we had been working on back in March, that was the story, was we're expecting to get a little bit more, so go ahead and plan for that. So in the last little while, though, it sounds like they've redone the projection based on the economist models and so forth. They said that we're probably going to be $90 million short in the hazardous substance toxics revenue. So that's not shown on the graph, but what we've been getting is that, yeah, we're going to be about $90 million short. So we're going to have to cut the coordinated prevention grant from about $28 million statewide to about $15 million. So on the backside is comparisons of different budgets that are currently in play up in Olympia now. So the green area, if you look at line 13, coordinated prevention grants, the governor had proposed almost $30 million to fund the program. And all of that would be coming from the Local Toxics Control Act portion of that. But you can see that all of those accounts, and I can't remember all of the acronyms, but LPCA is where CPG has come from. There's other uses of that. So CPG is just one portion of that, and then for the whole MOTCA funding, a bunch of other programs that use that. So you can see dates there in the blue area. The House had a proposal, and they proposed using only $15 million, and I think that's probably because of the projected revenue decrease. And then the Senate also proposed $15 million, but coming from different pots of money. So this kind of compares where things were within the last month. And I guess they're back there now. It sounds like the budget people are working through it. And it may take some time for that all to settle out. Sounds like Pete got a email recently saying, expect half of what you put in for, but we won't really know until the governor signs the budget, I guess is kind of the short story. Is there more Pete to talk about?
Well, those acronyms, so the SBCA is the State Building
Construction
Account. And so when you get to the House and the Senate, I guess it's in the House, they're talking there about floating bonds based on their state building capital account to fund. And if you take the LTCA, the Local Toxics Control Act, and the STCA, which is the State Toxics Control Act, those two added together should be your total MOTCA, Model Controls Toxic. Model Toxic Control Act. So the governor, the $45 million and $136 million is that projected revenue that you see on the other side, about that $180 million that we're projecting. So when you're saying a $90 million shortfall, is that basically reducing this map by $90 million, bringing it all the way back down?
That's right. I believe that's right. And again, I'm not sure where it's been for 13 through 15. Again, at this point, that was a projection, so I'm not sure. But there may, and this was shared with us a little over 2 years ago when Ecology was also going through the 13-15 budget and having angst about what it would be, and it ended up that it was okay.
And from program funding, we do not fund staff positions through these grant dollars, and we are also not paying for the disposal of the hazardous waste at our fixed facilities. So we are in a good position to weather the storm if they were to cut it in half. But I think the question for SWAC is it would impact some of the program budget dollars that we've laid out in the past, and I sent that along as an attachment. And we just need to go through the process of prioritizing how we would cut by 50%. And we've got SWAC group, we've got our regional solid waste system partners, which are all the cities, the town of Yakko, and county staff, to kind of weigh in on how we do that process. Public health has a separate piece because they, I think through, I'm not sure where it shows up on this map, maybe you can find it on the table, but there's money in there.
I think it comes out of the same.
Have that same set 29
funds.
Million.
What
was it? 100,000 or 150?
It's about 150.
So there's implementation dollars, which we get, and then there's enforcement dollars, which go out to the local health departments.
In our situations, I think different than what you described.
Here's the fund is
funding a person, and that's Melissa. And so a 50% cut of that to the department would basically, and again, I'm still trying to work on the details myself, but basically, she'd only be able to do 50% of the work in solid waste, and then we would hopefully have capacity, and I think we do. She would then just take on other responsibilities in the public health, in the environmental public health group.
No, a lot of your funding, though, comes from a garbage tax, though, isn't it? No, don't use that T word.
The majority of our money comes from an administrative fee. We get a monthly administrative fee from Waste Connections.
Right.
Who's the transfer station?
It's a nice way to put it.
So, again, I know we're running late on time, and I appreciate everyone's patience and absorbing a lot of information tonight. So, we will probably begin the prioritization, and maybe if we need to act, maybe it's in June, we can bring options. We should hopefully have more information by then. And then you could weigh in if that's
even. That's if the legislature is done by June.
And if they're not done by June, then we act as prudently as we can. But know that it does seem like this is going to most likely happen. Need to make some adjustments.
Pete, if I could just add on.
Yes.
As Pat Spiker, president of the Washington State Recycling Association, we took considerable issue with this. It affects a lot of our members in one form or the other, but it is mostly about programs. So we wrote a letter. Probably not going to make a whole lot of difference in the outcome, but just wanted you to know that, you know, that as an association, we were on top of it, and it does affect, and it will affect many, many of our members.
Yeah, and I brought in this. I think this is an early draft. I know that just to let you know also that there's and again, I'm still getting up to speed on these groups. There's a group all the county public health directors, and together they're developing sort of the message they want to bring forward about potential impacts of 50% cut to that. Folks are interested, and I'm sure that will be available at their website, but you know, just asking that it not be done and trying to be specific about the impacts it will have on their communities. But yeah, I haven't been working in the state long enough to have any read yet or anything I've heard inside county health about the potential that this will go through as is, but others probably have a better kid for that. That's my bet.
Yeah.
Fine. Is there anything else?
I just was wondering, your counterpart, Bobby Trustee, gets her clean water ad in the paper every time. We never seem to show the SWAC is meeting even to let our people know. It says here that the Clark County Clean Water Commission will meet Wednesday, and it goes on with the agenda, and it's listed right in the public meetings. I just thought maybe perhaps that's something we can do too.
Maybe that's why they get food.
That's right. Maybe so.
They only get water.
At least drinking water.
I will send an email as soon as I look at my own registration. This year, the Washington Refuge and Recycling Association meeting is here at the Hilton in Vancouver. And Pete seems to think if anybody wants to go, they can attend under the SWAC heading, which is $50 a head, which I think...
I can authorize.
Yeah, if you can authorize it. I'm going to invite, because if you've never had a chance to play with a garbage truck, we will have demonstrations of the equipment. That's what I do with sell garbage trucks.
And that's proof.
So if you've never been up close and personal with a garbage truck, come on down. I mean, we do the shows for the association members, but if you've never been up, you've never seen them, never been inside of them, come on down. I'll send an invite to everybody in reflection of the time.
We'll work down from the workhouse today.
It was one of my tricks.
John, what's the date?
I have no idea.
Oh.
I just signed up for it this morning.
Just send us an email.
Yeah, I'll just send out a group email.
Yeah. Is there anything else that anybody else wants to bring up?
Just briefly, I just want to thank you for being included in the updates. You know, after all these years, you know, as your preferred contracted provider, I appreciate, you know, the opportunity to say a few things, and I'll be very conscientious of your time. But I think there are some kind of select bullet points or updates that are beneficial, and I'll make sure that I come prepared and give you those. I think it'll help.
We'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Scott, in the folder, where do I take my fluorescent tubes?
You can take them to any one of our facilities. That goes for a moderate risk.
Okay,
risk
don't stick them in the garbage can.
Yeah. Preferred not to.
Home Depot
will as well.
Even the those garage,
yeah,
12 footers or whatever.
LightRecycleWA.org.
Or
your app.
Your app. Get the app. Recycle Right app.
Are we adjourned?
The meeting is adjourned.
Right. Sure.